This is a production of Cornell University.
Assay meeting February 21st, 2008.
Meeting's called to order at 4:45. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Excused.
I think he's coming late. Excused. Okay. Now on to the approval of the minutes from the January 24th, 2008 meeting. Take a second to look those over, and I'll take any motions. It's been a motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there a call for acclamation?
Call for acclamation.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any dissent to the call for acclamation? Seeing none, the minutes are approved unanimously. Liz, I believe there was a delay right in the minutes.
Okay.
So you'll have those for us next week. Great. On to open microphone. At this time, I'd like to invite any non-voting member of the student assembly to come forward. All undergraduates are non-voting members of the SA, so if there's something that you'd like to address that's not on the agenda, I'd invite you to come forward now. Oh, wow. Okay. Hi, please state your name and year for the record. You have a seat.
Timing.
Okay, what did you want to address?
I am the VP of Events for Cornell Live Grad. I'm just here on behalf of my organization to express my gratitude to the SA for the support and for the attendance of the event a couple weeks ago, Dining with Diverse Minds.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah, Vice President Gay, Vice President Lavin, Alon, and I were there. It was a very well put together event, so thank you for having us. Thank you for inviting us. And if there's anything else you need, please don't hesitate to ask us. Does anyone have any questions? All right, thank you very much. Anyone else for open microphone? Hi there.
Hi.
Name and year for the record.
My name is Aaron Edelman. I'm 2008. I'm the editor in chief of the Tech. I got married with my own phone number. I was invited down here to talk about it.
Okay, for those of you who have not read the article that appeared earlier in the Sun this week, there was an issue that you addressed. Do you want to kind of summarize that for the representatives that haven't read that email? And then we could yield to Vice President Gay or Vice President Lessig, who's the SAFC's liaison to the SA. Maybe we can answer some questions.
Okay. Well, the basic point of my article was I spent 3 months last semester going through a price quote that referred to the fall semester in the body of the email, but the date was from the previous semester. We got back a decision saying the date's wrong. Now, since then, there's been something added saying, mentioning things that I did. But it took 3 months to resolve an issue that didn't exist. If that was the only problem, that would have been, pretty outrageous. But we had some problems beyond that, where the treasurer of our organization was out of town in the budget process. I got 4 different answers from 4 SAFC, I went to the health
right.
The coordinators, co-chairs. So yes, you can fax the signature, you can't fax the signature, you should get someone to send you, you should get the federal government to send you an email and I can sign the form. Then someone tells you if I had signed the form, the SAFC would be obligated to prosecute you for fraud or something like that. You know, there were really a lot of things. And beyond that, going into the health section, I was also advised to put all of the different, you know, categories that were applying for funding in the wrong category. So,
okay, before we react, let's open it up to some questions.
Let me just finish by saying this.
Okay.
The point of the article was to say that I feel clear that I'm not alone in having serious issues with the bureaucratic process of the SAFC. I put a call out to people to send me emails about their experiences, and it sounds like there are a lot of people who are outraged by it.
Okay. Massing. Yeah, questions.
Aaron, right?
Yes.
When I read your article, I've seen this sentiment expressed many times in the past. All of us thought last semester when we were providing funding, you know, this was their problem they had with SAFC and the funding process. I've noticed this problem with SAFC since last year, since we did the charter review, because this body, unfortunately, we have the control of appeals. We have really no control of the operation of the SAFC. We have it in the sense, like in spirit, in our documentation, but day to day, most of us have no idea what's going on with SAFC. The only time we hear about SAFC is if there's something that needs to be, you know, changed in their handbook, or if there's an appeal that we need to rule on, and that's just because they're one of our committees, secondly, so the process is something like. It's very problematic, to be honest with you. I think that this body should have more control over all of our other committees over what SAFC does. Unfortunately, we don't. The problem with misinformation, I think, I and as the SAFC co-chair should address. The co-chairs themselves got up here this semester and didn't properly research a newspaper issue. So I hope that it will be addressed by the e-board. Elon is conducting an analysis of the student summary this semester. It's going to be presented to the administration and the next year's executive board as to what should happen in the future of FAA, what students are using, et cetera. And I would urge Elon to take us on the process to look at SAFC and how it can be changed. I think the biggest problem with SAFC is that because it's so ingrained and it's so necessary for many groups to get funding, it's very difficult to cause changes to that body. That's the biggest problem. Just changing one thing can mess up the entire framework that's been set up, or just removing that body will rip most students and positions in the campus department. So I think it's a slow process. I think the comments are very well-founded and inspired that we should take them into account, and I hope that in the future we have so much to do to take them into account, perhaps propose revisions.
Absolutely, and I would hope also that Elon incorporates you into the process if you do have an interest in that and would like to express your sentiment to that committee as well. Mark?
That was something I wanted to talk to you guys about. There's clearly enough interest in this. This is something I'll be continuing to pursue.
Great.
As far as this morning coming to you guys, I understand that you aren't involved in the day-to-day activities.
Yeah.
No,
this is absolutely the right forum to vent your concerns in addition to any public setting that you want.
So I'll be continuing to look into it and continuing to see about maybe publishing it in the daily
stuff. Sure. Very quickly, Elon.
When the time comes, I'm going to chat with every day.
And then Mark, you next.
For
me. And Mark?
Aaron, I just wanted to say, apart from the subject matter, from my point of view, as somebody who was on the e-board last year and understands how difficult it is to generate interest in anything in the essay, whether to improve it or anything, I just wanted to applaud you for actually writing the article and getting information out there and trying to stimulate interest and improving this body outside of it. I think it's not a lot of people actually take the time to do what you're doing, and I think it's great, and I would encourage more people to do that, and I just want to thank you for showing up today.
Ackman.
Aaron, I actually have a question for you. I
if you haven't checked your email since your article was out, have you received any stories yet?
I have actually. I've received a number of stories from different organizations that are well established, important institutions within Cornell that had been in years prior to that, receiving several $1,000s a semester. And the stories that I'm getting were, you know, there was extensive documentation with, you know, an I that was misdotted or something like that, and that resulted in us losing several $1,000s to getting $20 per copy, you know, or it's really, there, you know, I know Mark was saying that there's not much interest generated, and I can see that there's an apathy, but I don't think it's that people aren't interested. I think people have been beaten down, because the process is a bureaucratic nightmare. So,
okay, I know you're a witness, but like, in your opinion, is this your first time? Is this your first experience with that type of thing this past fall?
This first,
for the last fall,
or in general? This past fall was my first experience being the primary person on the budget.
Right.
Yeah, and going to the FDA, yeah, this is my first time being primary person on the budget.
All right, so Alon will follow up with you, and then if you need anything else, Ian is the SAFC liaison, and he will follow up if you have any further questions. But thank you for bringing this to our attention.
Okay. And if anyone wants to contact me, the email address is thecornelllunatic@gmail.com.
Great. Thanks so much. Anyone else for open microphone? Okay, moving on to announcements and reports. First is a spring 2008 elections report by Director of Elections Mark Coombs.
Okay, first, as I was giving you guys the numbers, we have 26 candidates running. The contested seats this year is the minority liaisons, international, the ILR seat, and the at-large seats. We do not have an LGBTQ candidate, and there are also two vacancies on the university assembly. So that'll be something for those of you who are coming back next year. And I was lucky enough to have my position next year running a special election in the fall.
All right.
As far as some recommendations for the future, one thing is I know a lot of you are actually candidates sitting here and are concerned about the mandatory elections meeting. I've been going to be pretty strict on that this year because that's not really my doing. It is obviously insofar as I'm on the SA, and the SA is asked to be mandatory. I would suggest the SA maybe look in the future about making that meeting not mandatory, or taking at least not making it all caps on the schedule. And it's difficult for me to be able to excuse absences, etc. That's why it's mandatory. The other thing I've gotten, still a million more emails about people mentioning student organizations. I'm sorry, not student organizations. Campus political coalitions and campus organizations in their statements. It got to the point where the office actually had to, we allowed candidates to resubmit statements that they had mentioned, like the word student assembly in their statement. People weren't penalized for it, but it got a little bit silly this year, and I would suggest maybe changing that in the future as well. And lastly, the only thing I would say is I hope that we continue to look for ways to increase interest, get more candidates. I know that we have, you know, out of all the seats that we have, basically, you know, three and then the at-large seats are the only contested seats. So I would suggest continuing to look for ways to generate and stimulate interest. Other than that, I'll keep everybody up to date, and does anybody have any logistical questions or questions in general about the election?
Ronnie.
So is there any chance, instead of holding a special election, to just increase the number of undesignated slots to five instead of four to just make up for the LGBT?
By definition, though, wouldn't the LGBTQ seat be seated by the fifth place finisher in the at-large election?
No, and I say that because we had the same problem with the HUMAC seat.
That's how we sat Andrew.
Well, no, that was only after. Okay, the charter requires that there's a vacancy like that. We actually held a special election for the HUMAC seat. 17 packets were checked out.
Not one was turned back in. So there was not one of 17 Humekis that actually checked out the packet that actually wanted to run. So only then could Andrew be seated.
Okay.
So unfortunately, and there again, if the FAA, enjoy doing this year is finding recommendations for the DOE to next year's essay. That would be another thing I recommend changing. Because it is kind of a silly process.
Yeah.
You also have two vacant UA seats. There are multiple candidates running in contested races. Somebody asked me earlier if we could just take some of the at-large people and ask if they wanted to be UA reps. And unfortunately, no. I mean, it would seem like it's really efficient, but we have to run these special elections. So if you're going to be here next year, I would recommend looking at that and making that more efficient.
Any other questions from Mark? Mark, thanks for all your hard work to get these candidates, I know.
Thank you. Thank all of you for publicizing this and for all the updates.
Okay. I have an email to read. It arrived to me today. Dear CJ, I am pleased to accept and receive the Student Assembly's Resolution 12, resolution on the direct elections of the Student Assembly President and Executive Vice President. I wish you well as you implement this worthy initiative. With best regards, David Scorton. It's good news that the President is happy about that. Are there any other announcements or reports, NASDAQ? And then Vince.
I want to talk briefly, and CJ, this is a section you told me to bring it up, so if you want me to move it to later, that's fine. I want to bring this up briefly because I know I brought it up with Dylan and CJ when we did the SAC field last semester. I know we did the process incorrectly, and I wanted to make sure we did it correctly because when I was in the office coming today, there was a lot of people waiting to see Terry Hector handing in SAC field documentation, so I wanted to make sure that we did this correctly from the outset. So I guess, should I just explain what I found? And I'm already
Why don't we hold off?
VOD.
Yeah. We'll put that at the end of VOD because I know Liz and the Slope Day folks are here and we have some other things to talk about.
Absolutely.
So let's put that at the end. I know I said announcements, but thank you for being flexible. Any other announcements, Vince? I know you had something to say.
March 27th.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. The Class of 2008 Council would like to utilize the Memorial Room for an event we would like to hold, known as Taste with 08. We're going to have a wine tasting event, where we're going to choose the Class of 2008 wine. We're going to invite people to Ithaca wineries, and we're going to have a competition where people will try to, wine. And we like to hold that event 4 to 6 p.m. on a Thursday.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you guys could use this room because based on our budget, we don't have, this room is free and we don't have the resources to pay for another room.
What's the rationale behind not having it from 6 to 8?
We want the event to be we had from 6 to 8, we feel more aspects would be more drinking. So we want it to be more of a
wine tasting. Okay.
And it would be better for getting Cornell's approval in that time period.
Okay. Does anyone have any problems with that?
Also for attendance. People are on Central and they can come right here.
Achman, go ahead.
The only problem I have is that I can't go to the student meeting.
I'm sure Ian would excuse you to go get drunk. Any other? Yeah. All right. That's fine. I'd ask Ari to maybe reserve another location for the meeting. Yes.
I've been in contact with Cornell Cinema, and you guys can use the stage Cornell Cinema.
Well, that certainly.
And you need to be on Cornell Cinema stage.
That would
turn it around.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Any other questions or announcements? I want to announce that next Thursday will be SA Shirt Day. And I'd like to invite all of you to wear your SA polo shirt. So put those to good use. We'll all be here on Thursday. Any other announcements? Okay, business of the day. The first is a Slope Day update and discussion with Adam Gay, and I know Liz and Joe and are here, so why don't you guys come forward, and I think Adam has some news.
Liz, if you got any questions, I'll just step up. I'll look at some questions.
Let me just summarize where we are right now. It appears after talking and speaking with Dean Hubble a couple days ago that we finally have some kind of temporary conclusion, at least to the last few months, about what's going to happen with Slope Day. After the meeting last week, I think we all spoke about where we're right now, the status of Slope Day, and many of the logistical issues that need to be ironed out on your end. And it appears after speaking with Dean Hubble that he's talked to all of the interested parties, logistics, UPSA, undergrads, student activities office, and Slope Day people. And the arrangement that seems to be made is that this year the administration will assume the responsibility of collecting demographic data on all of the people who attend Slope Day. So they will bear the cost of that and then actually collect who could swipe ID cards, collect who is an undergrad, who's a grad. And there won't be any tickets issued this year. However, based on this data, we can prepare for the next 2 years to act appropriately when assessing where the cost of the event should be allocated. So based on the information that is collected this year, the future assembly can and future Slope Day programming board and steering committee can appropriately assess the need to allocate the costs. So I think this is a, from my perspective, after having spoken with many parties on this over the last few months, this seems like a good compromise in that logistically it seems difficult to implement any ticketing for this year, so this will alleviate that concern. And secondly, in terms of the undergraduate student body, we don't have to bear any of the costs of this. This will be done by the administration. And also, this would be helpful in actually assessing accurate numbers of undergrads and grads. So I think, is there anything else you wanted to add up front, or are you just going to questions? Thanks. And also, we ended up taking the resolution that we had last week off the table. And what I think I would recommend we may be doing is instead of presenting a resolution, which doesn't really make any sense, going ahead and addressing this, and we address any other appendix changes which need to be made over the next 2 years. And at that point, whenever that comes up, we can add any appropriate stipulation.
Yeah.
The compromise is that this year the administration will bear the cost and the responsibility for actually swiping ID cards and determining at the gate which the demographic information, who was undergrads, who's grads. So all that information will be captured this year, and then over the next 2 years, that information can be used to determine if it is fair to actually charge tickets to grad students or not. If not, then they can stand to that.
And I think it's important to note also that the graduates, and Amy, you can address this, would agree to pay an equitable amount based on the data that we found.
Let me comment on that. After speaking with Dean Hubble, I think it's not really an issue that there will be negotiations going on into the future.
Okay.
My understanding is that it'll be very straightforward. This isn't a qualitative assessment of whether they warrant it or not. This can be very straightforward based on the math. Well, a per head contribution, whether grad students or not, will be taking ticket prices. So it's not a question of whether they'll be open or amenable to it.
Sure.
Or I'm hoping that this will just be a very straightforward thing. We just go by the numbers and do that. That seems the most equitable way to approach this. From my perspective.
All right, I'm going to open up the speakers with Amy first and then Ahmed.
So GPSA, we've been discussing this a lot as well, and we are definitely glad that there's an agreement to gather the actual data, because there's been a lot of controversy over the survey that has gone out. And the one thing that I do want to remind you of is that our allocation for the next 2 years for Slope Day has been put in place as well and voted on. And then it will be up to future generations of leaders to kind of reevaluate this, because there are things, equitable has many things that come into play, and I think that also needs to be defined by future leadership. So I'm very glad that we're coming to a compromise for this year and say, let's get some data and look at this again in the funding cycle and future.
There's a minute left. Liz, go ahead.
Who comes to the door.
would take a good amount of time to process this data, and I think as soon as it is processed, fall semester, the GPS and the FA is looking for more logistics here. Membership needs will also be undefined and equitable and talk about who came through, when they came through, and I don't think there's much we can do up until the data has actually been done.
Achman.
I just want to preface this by saying I really thank all of you, Amy, the FAB board, Liz, the administration for working out a compromise. But I have something to say about this compromise because, to be honest, the only word that came to mind when I heard this compromise is ridiculous. I think we had talked about this in executive session last week, and we talked about the fact that the GPS tag for many, many years has not been contributing to slope deck as they should. Now, I understand and I respect the fact that slope deck means different things to different people. But the fact of the matter is, undergrads are bearing the cost of that debt, and I don't think that's fair. And I'm interested to know why a different position hasn't been acknowledged, such as seeing how many graduate students show up to this slope deck, and then making the GPSA consider paying back retroactively what they would pay. I mean, I understand that this, I don't know what their charter would say about this, but the fact of the matter is we're facing a situation where a sizable portion of the Cornell population is subsidizing someone else's pretty much fund, and I just don't think that's fair. And I don't think that undergraduate students, and as undergraduate,
30 seconds.
I think it's a shame for us to accept this particular compromise. Again, I just want to say, like, I know you guys are working hard on this. I don't mean to completely, you know, throw it away, but I just want to know why was that particular option not explored, and why other options where the GPSC would actually bear some of the cost weren't explored to make this equitable as potentially.
The speaker's time has expired, but I'm going to yield to Vice President Gay because this does fall under his purview.
Thanks, CJ. I completely agree. Not completely agree, but I do agree with the sentiment that, and trust me, I've been among the most firm believers in that we do need to treat the undergraduates fairly because I don't believe that they have been thus far in terms financially. However, I think this is a question of logistics. And if logistics, and if it can actually be implemented this year in terms of ticketing, I think we have to accept at least this portion of it that we need to collect the end of this year and then move forward from there. Anything else we try to manage, if that's not going to work, we're going to have to, and you can't make that happen because logistically it's just not possible. But on the other note, making the grad students retroactively pay, that's something which could be discussed, negotiated. I don't think that would actually happen because I don't think they have a budget for that, nor would they actually do that. No, we couldn't mandate that as the undergraduate student body. However, this we can further explore options past the slope day regarding graduates when we discuss the appendix and what we actually want to include in the slope day stipulations.
Master.
I just have a sort of follow-up question to Adam. So there was like no way to what we talked about last week, this year.
No.
I guess the only other alternative that I would think about if there wasn't is sort of somewhat what I'm just going to say is telling the GPSA that if there's not going to be some sort of retroactive repayment of funds, that you know, we could just not like invest money in there, just not like graduate students on the slope otherwise. Or,
no, that's something that falls under the purview of nothing's definite, but that doesn't fall under our purview. We certainly couldn't do with that, and I think everybody knew that. It's ridiculous. However, as Ahmed said before, retroactively or perhaps future, if we could technically include something in our, if I'm just throwing it out there, if you guys wanted to include this in the appendix, you could put something in there that above and beyond any equitable allocation for the years 2009-2010, you could be charged, every graduate would be charged $10 or $15 additionally to make up for the past 4 years without ever paying anything. I'm not advocating that. I'm saying that's some option like that. But in terms of specifically the options we discussed last week during executive session, I don't, logistically nothing's possible at this point after speaking with everybody. So I think this is the only.
30 seconds.
Okay, so you said we can add something like that. Where do you add this to?
The appendix.
Where can we add this stipulation? We discuss this with, so that the compromise would include some sort of pain? Because I think we'd all agree. I mean, it's very interesting to hear the tone change from executive session to open session. I mean, we all agreed that that was ridiculous in executive session, and I don't hear enough people, you know, bringing up the fact that it is ridiculous that we're accepting this compromise right now when the graduate students are not even willing to. I mean, even, I'm sorry, but I respect Amy a lot, but even her tone is like, we don't really know if future leaders are going to decide. But that doesn't cut it.
I think to answer your first question as to what can we do, we can stipulate something in the appendix that says that if Slope Day does not follow these guidelines and graduate students do not allocate a significant amount of money, then we will withhold our funding, thereby canceling Slope Day, but we would not want to do that. I believe appropriations will be meeting 2 weeks, within 2 weeks, and hopefully...
In that forum, I think we can discuss all of these.
Yeah. Adam, do you want to respond
to that? In terms of tone, trust me, I and along with the executive board and everybody else, I think we all were in complete agreement on this. However, I'm just kind of resigned to the fact at this point that logistically it's not possible to do anything for this year due to the time constraints, but... As I said before, this is definitely something in terms of retroact. Whatever we want to discuss, this can be brought up during this discussion during Appendix B in 2 weeks. We can add stipulations however you guys want to at that point.
Vince.
I'm actually not in agreement for retroactive payment, not for the act of us, for them free riding on us right now. But in the sense of equity, that would mean future graduate students are going to be paying for past graduate students' free riding off a Slope Day. And I don't think, I mean, just not equitable in that sense. So.
All right, anyone would like to speak? Yes,
thank you. I think we've all been really grateful that the undergraduates have stepped up to the plate and helped with a portion of the cost of Slope Day. And that the grads are starting to consider doing that and will be doing that in the future. But I also do want to point out that the university currently is still paying for about at least 50% of the event. Student activity fee money does go to the entertainment, but a lot of departments are contributing a lot of resources to the event, and we're really just trying to move forward with this and trying to find a compromise, and I just hope that we can and move forward, and we'll continue to work with all parties so that this is an event that everybody can enjoy.
Anyone for Andrew Wang?
I'd like to give my time to Representative Dale.
Thank you, Andrew. I just want to respond on this directly to you. I honestly respect the administration's paying 50%. That's great, and I think it also is good for the university in terms of Slope Day was created to sort of limit university liability and for us to also have fun. So I mean, if both parties, the university and the students, are benefiting from this day. If you consider getting drunk on the Slope Day benefit. But I think that what is more important than moving forward is moving forward correctly. And I don't think we are moving forward correctly when this concession has been made year after year. I mean, for a lot of people who weren't here the last time around, this came up 2 years ago, this came up before, and this always happens where the graduate students are going to take it back and see how it works for them. And again, I have the utmost respect for all the graduate students and all the GPSA members. I just think that in this particular situation, they have made an error of judgment. And they have not taken into account the fact that they're benefiting as much, or if they're not benefiting as much, they're not trying. They don't want to contribute as much as they are benefiting. And I think that this solution, to be honest, while it's good, it's definitely slightly to me as if undergraduate representative, a cop out from what the real solution should be, which is, as I said, grad students should be paid. If future grad students pay, I mean. That's fine. I mean, something has to happen. Maybe from this year's fund, something should be set aside. I don't know how the funds work. I would be interested if the chair would yield some time to Amy. She could explain to us. I think this should
not go on, you know, this shouldn't just be swept under the carpet. We shouldn't just consider this a good compromise because
the speaker's time has expired. Amy, do you want to take a minute to describe the funding process in the GPSA?
Our funding process is fairly similar to yours. We have groups that are under byline funding. And in the last year and this year, in the last byline funding, I would say 2 years ago, Slope Day came to us fairly late in the funding cycle and had not gone through the procedures to become a byline funded group. So what happened is for last year and this year, GPSA has been funding a gift, although not as large as the SA connectivity portion, out of their own personal budget. Our budget is actually much smaller than even the SA's budget. And then from there, this last fall, in our funding process, Slope Day had gone through the signature procedures. It did not hit the exact signatures, but we decided to suspend our goals because we figured, we saw the fact that this was a very good way towards building community membership. And so, with that, the allocation that was approved by the Assembly in a similar process to yours, and voted on at the November Assembly meeting, was $1.50 per graduate student.
What was the original allocation recommendation from the Financial Committee?
From the Finance Commission, it was $2.90.
Okay.
It was $2.90.
What was the rationale behind dropping it from $2.90 to $1.50?
So the rationale from the Student Assembly.
Oh, what was the request you made to the GPSA? The initial budget request that you submitted to the GPSA, how much did you ask for?
It was, I believe it was $750, which came from the number of the budget,
okay.
Which
thanks.
We decreased once we had the new number, and we don't have
it. Okay, go ahead, Amy.
So what the sentiment was when this came back, so the Assembly actually received the recommendation and sent it back to the Finance Commission. And when it was voted on at the November meeting, the sentiment from the Assembly, from the majority of the Assembly, was that graduate students as a whole did not value Slope Day on the same level as undergraduate. And I'm just being,
that's
I'm trying to summarize the
okay.
conversation. And so what happened was
no.
that people felt that there needed to be more of an effort to reach out to the graduate community because there's a very polarizing view in the graduate community of Slope Day. There are a collection of graduate students who are very much so, yay, Slope Day.
Yeah.
And then there are a collection
yeah.
who are very
all right, that's fine. As long as we're familiar with the process, the first speaker's list has been exhausted. Mark, go ahead. I'm sorry. I did have you.
Actually, yeah, I'm gonna just because I have you here, go a little bit off topic. This is the Slope Day discussion.
Have you
me?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I have questions then. I remember a couple years ago, I actually spoke with Gannett about what they do on Slope Day, and they told me that it basically turns into like an army field MASH unit in there, and they have problems with people just drinking so much that they pass out on the slope that, I don't know, heart strength, but we have to be trucked down to Cayuga Medical and all that. What are we doing this year to discourage alcohol consumption, particularly to an extreme, and, how has it been trending over the past couple of years? Do we have any information on our students?
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, please.
We actually do the connect. We actually have a survey at the end of every slope day to go to a plus proportion of the undergraduate community. They respond to how many drinks they had. Lucky for us, you know, we really got the number of people who have been drinking 15 plus drinks in a day. Actually, it's nowhere near
the number of people.
It's incredible to us. We implemented last year a function slope early kind of campaign where we opened slope by 12-1 to really push people coming with pride and stuff. And we're going to be doing that again in hopes of maybe getting the class councils into like getting the grad students into it and pulling people earlier because we feel like the earlier we can get them there, the less time they have to go out and grind and drink. We've like significant help for us and the new policies that they put in with CIS, you know, taking all the hard alcohol out of the like how which is where most of the people are going to drink. So, the trend has been going down, and I think it will continue. You know, we're still working on new ways to do it.
I can't remember the exact statistics, but I remember, particularly after last year's event, Gannett was feeling like we were going in a, or not that we turned the corner completely, but that in terms of the people that needed support by the EMS crews or Gannett, they were seeing that, yes, there were alcohol-related health problems, but that the seriousness had gone down fairly significantly from the year before, and that's really huge for our community. So we hope we're moving in the right direction, and I know my colleagues in Fraternity and Sorority Affairs really want to continue to work with the fraternities and sororities about pre-parties and trying to minimize the focus on alcohol consumption.
I think that's fantastic news, and if you ever need any help or if there's anything that we could do, I would definitely encourage you to bring that forward, because I think a lot of us are interested in keeping those numbers down.
Anyone else for the first speaker's list? All right. Second speaker's list, if anyone's interested. I'm seeing none. I'm going to end discussion. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. The representative conduct discussion, that's the next item on business of the day, is going to be held in executive session. So moving on, NASDAQ, you had to speak to us. You want to go ahead and do that?
Really briefly, I guess it wasn't just to inform these things, but I mean, there's also a point or question that I think that we need to address. Basically, I think the last semester is all FDIC appeals after they went to the FDIC were sent to the Appropriations Committee, at which point those recommendations were brought to the Assembly and then they voted upon those recommendations. Now, what's happened in the past, and I guess that RNI went through the essay, the charter, all of the explanations, the bylaws, the charter, and the past minutes to some from previous years. And basically, the way that it's been done in the past, the way it should be done, is that the way it's been done in the past is it goes from FDIC to appropriations. Appropriations, or FDIC in the past, to prepare documents that went out while FDIC members that, said what happened to each appeal, how the FDIC voted, and the vote that we took was whether or not the FDIC erred in the decision they made. So it wasn't a vote on what appropriations was, because appropriations of the committee didn't have any kind of authority over another committee, which FDIC is. Further documentation of the FDIC and our charter, it's not really supposed to go, there's nothing saying it should go to appropriations, it just says after FDIC, groups will have the opportunity to appeal directly to the FDA. And that's what it says. When I spoke with the young CEO last semester, and basically all agreed that we go forward what we had last semester, so I'm not trying to change anything that's happened in the past, what's happened in the past will stay. We wanted to make sure that we're correct for the future. And so while I think that if we agree that we take the vote on whether the FDA should be here this semester or not, sort of the question that I really have is there really a necessity, given the number of appeals that we have, for it to go to appropriations for a recommendation, given that recommendation is not binding in any way, it doesn't really do anything besides just have another form for the groups to have to express.
I think the benefit of bringing it to appropriations is that we do get, in addition to assembly members' opinions on certain issues, we do get community members. They do kind of go through the nitty-gritty and provide us with a recommendation and hopefully answer some questions that may be uncertain. But I'm of the opinion that it's important to incorporate as many community members as possible into the process. So unless anyone...
The only thing I would add, and I'm personally fine with that, if that's the case, the only thing that I would add, I'd really like to see what's happened in the past, and I would really like to see the board follow up on this.
Sure.
But there's actually documentation brought to us as to what was said in those meetings of appropriations, if it's going to appropriations, what was said, and how appropriations voted, and what their rationale was, something that the entire committee agreed upon, and that those meetings were open to everyone for what the charter said.
Okay.
There's no parts of it that are in executive session. Because otherwise, to me, it's problematic to send it to appropriations if the committee is not going to create a record of it, or if the committee is not going to keep the process open, which is what it should be.
Okay.
So, I mean, I guess if having the committee goes now, I think that's fine if the assembly doesn't send it to appropriations first before it comes to us.
Okay, that's fine.
My understanding is there's two different things we're dealing with. Last semester, you're going to try to get in the process of going into executive session. That was specifically stipulated in our charter that we had to do that. That we had to go into executive session during the bylaw and funding process, which was cited many times by many members of the city. This student assembly incorrectly. However, for the appropriations process, if there is nothing prescribed, I think that is fair that
if he doesn't explicitly say that we have to go into executive session, that's fine. Minutes are recorded.
And then there will be an active document produced that will
Yes, that sounds fine.
Yeah. Okay. And Ian will assist in that process as well. Okay. Maybe we should get a clerk at those meetings to take accurate minutes.
So let's do that.
Okay. I'm going to end discussion on that, and we're going to move to the next item. Okay.
This was brought up at prior summer meeting, and we discussed it, and I think it's important for us to address it as undergraduate student assembly that the story is when Katie was elected as the undergraduate student trustee last spring, and she would be an undergraduate, and we're under the assumption that she would stay an undergraduate for 2 years. I know we had an internal election last spring, Adam said that she was a senior this year, and that it's been brought up since that she won't be an undergraduate after this year. And now that she's here at the meeting, I just wanted to bring it up and have her address it and set the record straight. What's happening? Is she still an undergraduate? Is she not? What the future of that will be and how that's going to affect the elections process? Because frankly, I don't want to see two grad student trustees, no offense to you, maybe the GPSA, but that's not what the original intent of the resolution that we passed last year was. It was to maintain one undergraduate, one graduate for 4 years to trial to see how that would work out and to be really bad at undergraduate.
Kate, are you willing to answer questions about this? Do you want to come to the microphone, please?
Yeah, I'm actually have to head out, so I can't talk about this. But I sent CJ an email about it saying that if you do have any concerns, you should talk to Doug, Mikran Kanda, who was on the TNC last year and who was the one who basically introduced the resolution to the SA and the GPSA. He'd be the one who could give you all the information on exactly what the resolution entails and exactly what the TNC talked about last year.
I know what the resolution entails. I was on the summer last year and we discussed it. The only question that I had was simple before you go is, are you currently an undergraduate? Do you plan to be an undergraduate for the rest of the term?
I have no idea what my plans are going to be at this point. I really don't. I am an undergraduate now. And it's not a responsibility anyway, because if you look at the joint resolution, then there's nothing that stipulates anything along those lines.
Vince?
Yeah.
2 minutes.
I just want to point out that during the trustee election, didn't Julie Jang and Grace Barnard, who were both seniors, didn't they run and they were under the expectation that they would be graduate students? And I don't think there's anything in the trustee bylaws currently that stipulates that our undergraduate person has to remain an undergraduate. So I don't think she's violated any rules governed by the trustees.
Yeah.
So I mean, in that sense, she might not represent the undergraduates but if she becomes a graduate student, but I don't think she's violated anything.
I'm actually certain that I haven't, and I have checked this with the TNC and with the people who introduced the resolution last year. That there is absolutely nothing that would prevent you from doing it, that the entire intent of the resolution was that if they restricted it so that an undergraduate had to remain an undergraduate, that would restrict students even further. I mean, they already make it so that freshmen, for instance, this year freshmen last year were at a disadvantage because they were running against sophomores and they wouldn't get the chance to run again until they were juniors, so then to stipulate that they would have to remain an undergraduate for their fifth year, if they wanted to run again as a junior, would restrict them even further. So by doing anything to try to change what was explicitly discussed last year by the TNC and the SA and the GPSA, it will only go to decrease students' choices even more.
And that's that. And then Ahmed.
Thank you for bringing that up. I want to make sure the reason that I brought it up is to clarify what it is. I don't think any rules violations occur. The reason I think it's important is because we are the undergraduate student assembly, and the idea is that hopefully we would have an undergraduate representative at all times when we've elected that person.
And then they have to change exactly if I was living with all seniors, doing everything with my sorority, and yet taking graduate level courses.
NASDAQ's time. Go ahead.
But that being said, it's problematic to me that you're saying you don't really know what your plans are going to be in the future, and you kind of research and you have nothing about it in the rules. It's problematic what it's problematic.
30 seconds.
Basically, where this is going to go in the future, because it seems to me that you're not basically guaranteeing to us that you will be an undergraduate for 2 years, which is not a violation of any rules, I understand that. But let's not forget that you promised that in campaign. And I think, personally, it's an ethical issue. It's not an issue that this body can address or take action against you, but it's just an issue that this body
has
an undergraduate rep, but the students undergraduate do not have an undergraduate rep for the entire 2 years, which you promised. That's why it's a problem. That's why I think it's a problem.
Speaker's time has expired. Ahmed?
More than like an attack against UK, I think this is a discussion about whether this resolution was appropriate, because you might be looking for seniors and doing everything that the undergrads are doing, but the fact of the matter is, I think that it looks like we're going to have two graduate student trustees for a while. I just wanted you to address them. Your campaign promise about the graduate death battle. Because I remember in your Facebook group, you explicitly said, and this was like one of your selling points, I am one of the only candidates that can guarantee you I will be an undergraduate for the next 2 years. And I believe it was a swipe of the other candidates who were juniors. Why did you do that if you didn't? And I know you knew that you weren't going to stay undergraduate, because Adam Gay, during the internal elections, told us you were going to be a senior next year when we nominated him as director of elections. So you knew before the election was over that you weren't going to be an undergraduate, yet you did not change that on the campaign material.
That's not true. I have not, first of all, I find it offensive that we're even discussing my personal academic situation before any decision has been made. I haven't made the decision, not to mention that any application that I would have submitted is still pending. So I have no idea what's going to happen. So this entire discussion is completely on the presumption that I might get into admitted to a very competitive Ivy League program, which I think is an unfair assumption to make.
So your nomination for UE was pretty much your admitting was wrong.
No, I mean, I'm technically a senior, but I could be a senior next year as well.
Okay.
So the whole presumption that you can have this discussion, I think, is personally offensive to discuss my personal
academic. We're not discussing the personal academic, but we're discussing it because it was a campaign promise, and we're discussing it because, I mean, I personally thought the resolution was going to be...
The speaker's time has expired. Mark?
Can I respond?
10 seconds.
My only response would be, we can go back and we can look at all the campaign statements that every single one of us has made, and I can guarantee you that every single one of us has made.
Relevant to the discussion, Mark.
Yeah, I would say, fundamentally, as somebody who's sitting here, I think perhaps Kate should have been more forthright if she had the plans that have been kind of alluded to, but I think that fundamentally, I think we need to worry about, and trustee, is that I don't know if they need to be an undergraduate because they represent undergraduate concerns. And so I hope that, regardless of your status, you continue to represent undergraduate concerns, as I hope Mal does. I know Mal was here earlier. Mal is not here anymore. But I hope Mal, in addition, continues to represent undergraduate concerns. I think the debate over his status as a graduate or undergraduate is... if it's important at all, it largely pales in comparison to whether you continue to hear what we have to say and hear what the undergrads have to say.
Of course I would. And again, you know, the thought behind the resolution in splitting the seats was that we didn't have two graduate students who were living in the commons with kids on the Board of Trustees. The intent of it was to have relatively fair representation between the different interest groups at Cornell. I think Mal and I represent very different constituencies, and I'm sure that whoever is elected from the graduate student perspective will have a very different perspective than I do. I would intend to do that. And as I said, I'll still be involved in all the same activities that I am now, and living with all the same friends that I have. So it's not like anything will change other than my academic status, if that even changes.
Andrew Wang.
Hi, Trustee Duke. Thank you for coming in. I really appreciate your work though this past year as a trustee. You definitely have voiced your opinion as an undergrad, helping as undergrad students. And my main concern is not with you, because I definitely can see you continuing with your work with undergraduates, even though you may possibly be a grad student. I'm just afraid of
for future possibilities? Like, is this loophole that's there? Like, what are we going to do about this in the future? Are we going to allow students to, now students know about this loophole? Like, are we going to allow this quote unquote representative? Like, how do we know an undergraduate student, if someone like Kate, just the same situation, they decide to change their opinion and voice for the grad student? So I just wanted to echo the concern I had for that part, but I definitely trust Kate in continuing her support for undergraduates, but I just have concerns for future students that may be kind of running their students to speak.
You have a minute.
Yeah, yep. I really appreciate that answer. Thank you very much. I think that the one thing to really consider that I've briefly mentioned before is that by saying undergraduates can only come in certain years, it basically restricts those undergraduates who come in the wrong year because they have to do it. The freshmen will have to run against sophomores and potentially juniors. So by saying that you have to remain an undergraduate, say there's a freshman who runs his or her freshman year, isn't elected, wants to do it again in junior year, it's really important to them, but then there's caught between seeing an undergraduate, paying undergraduate tuition, doing all that for 5 years, instead of the possibility of being able to still run for trustee and become a trustee, but maybe doing an MN program. And I think that to the intent of the resolution, someone who's been an undergraduate here knows undergraduate concerns. Graduate students who don't go here undergraduate for their undergraduate work really don't. So I think that the importance is that those individuals really understand.
Speaker's time has expired. Go ahead.
I'm going to answer Andy's question. Kind of a discussion about Resolution 12 last week. Kate's forthrightness aside, while we have undergraduate students running for trustee in a senior position, the qualification is getting elected in this. Students, if they feel that maybe Kate shouldn't be a graduate student, then maybe they shouldn't have elected her. So, in that sense, she wasn't forthright. Maybe it's an unethical thing. Maybe that should cover the sun or something. But I don't think we should restrict the position and put stipulations on it, because that would severely hurt the election itself and not trust the student body.
Amy?
You know, and you guys are going to do the same as Cornell. And if somebody is an undergraduate here, say, as a junior and runs for trustee, they're still going to have the same time as Cornell and to serve in the Cornell education system. And to restrict them, I mean, you guys can define that, but knowing graduate students who are here, who are undergrad here, they have a much more distinct connection to the undergraduate population here than they do the
Yeah, and I think that doing anything to change this, I mean, regardless of, you know, my situation as well, but I think doing anything to change it would really even restrict students even further, and that every other year of incoming students, you'll basically say to those classes, don't even try running for trustee because it will be very, very difficult to do if you're a freshman, and then you can't do it when you're a junior unless you want to pay undergraduate tuition for 5 years. So I think that by doing anything to try to change this at this point, you'll in fact be inhibiting undergraduate students even more, which is, I don't think, what any of us want to do.
Any other speakers? All right, thanks for answering some questions.
Hey, John, I never asked you to move that to not fit for the day. So I'm actually asked if we actually conduct that now, the representative conduct discussion.
In executive session?
No, right now. So I never asked you to move to
All right.
And it's on.
Fine. Representative conduct discussion is the next item of business of the day. Vice President Gay, who is leading the discussion, has asked not to include it in business of the day.
Right.
Not an executive session. However, Resolution 16 will also be moved to the end of business of the day, so we will be addressing that after this discussion conducted by Vice President Gay. You have 10 minutes.
All right, thanks. This will take 10 minutes. I would just like to remind everybody, given the nature of the byline funding process and our position as an undergraduate student assembly, we have a fiduciary responsibility to the undergraduates who we represent, and as such, we have to conduct ourselves in an appropriate manner. Any other ethical and moral obligations we have aside, which we agreed to in our oath when we took it, there's just a couple of basic things that we should understand as we approach this process. Just like the chair of organization, president of clubs, you step down when there's a debate, when there's a vote on your club, if it's funding IFP, for example, in appropriations, the group that I have been charged, you have to abstain. And that's the process we follow because we have a fiduciary responsibility. We are a body which allocates money in the government allocation. And the reason we're bringing this up, as we were approached by one of the byline funding groups regarding the conduct of one of the members of the student assembly, they approached the executive board because they considered the conduct unacceptable, and I think this is an appropriate time that we have this discussion on, because this is not how we should be discussing ourselves. This actually refers to Representative Wang and his dealings with the MGLC. We received an email from their president who was incredibly concerned regarding your conduct and your requests you made, and she provided emails, and the basic point was that you use your position as a member of another organization to try to unduly and pressure her to give you funding. And the basic point is that you sent her a couple of emails, and a couple of sentences were that I strongly urge you to consider supporting someone financially, having you on the few assembly members that rescue your organization. But then you go on to say that this warrant that to use the funding of the same issue will come back, and eventually MGLC will get its essay balance funding cut from 50 cents per undergrad student to nothing. Your organization was extremely close to having its complete funding cut if a few members such as myself and not go to against. I hope you will reconsider your request. And there's a number of things, and I think this is, since this email is distributed to the salary executive board, there's a number of instances where you very, very much so cross the line that anybody else can comment on these, on where you can actually put yourself forward as a representative of the student assembly and start referencing it. And I guess it's more appropriate to open ourselves up to a discussion at this point, because this is a very serious issue financially based on our own responsibilities as members. And so I'd actually like to just hear what other people have to say about this.
I am forming a speakers list, but I'd like to give Andrew the first spot, and you can take 3 or 4 minutes and make a statement and describe the situation.
So thank you for bringing this issue up. So I just wanted to mention that as student assembly members, we are charged as members to help take part in the decision on how the student fee is spent. And in this instance, several students who voted for me when I was elected asked for me to forward a request from their organization to the organization that Vice President Gay mentioned, and that is a completely fine thing to do. And I think that as our responsibility as elected representatives, that we should be forwarding each student organization request, because if the one problem that came up was this organization requested funding, and they did not send me an email back, they did not even mention anything back to this organization that asked for funding, which was ridiculous. And as a result, students asked me to forward a request to see what is going on, why did this violent funding group not respond to the request at all. And I think that's a huge problem, that is a major issue that's going on. Many organizations like Cornell ask for funding from these violent funding groups, and they get no responses. So as a result, I had to take action as a that large representative requested by several students to make an action on this. And it seems that some people here feel like that's inappropriate, and I think it's the direct opposite. I think it's very appropriate for student representatives on the student assembly to act for the students. That is what we're elected to do. So I think it's not a conduct issue. I definitely think there's nothing wrong with what happened. I may have been a little bit strong in the emails, but because of the lack of communication, that can be easily seen as purposely, they did not want to communicate back to the organization that asked for funding. So yeah, so I definitely do not think this is a conduct issue. I think this is an issue that lies in itself with the fact that SA members are binded to
act as students, and be a part of the bio-funded process. So I just want to mention that's what I strongly feel, and if you think that's wrong, then that's how you feel. But as a representative, I feel that's our commitment, our responsibility to act as students. I'm not going to be neutral when students who vote for me want me to voice my opinion for them. So thank you, and you might turn it back to the chair.
All right. I am forming a speakers list. The first is Alon.
All right. And, sure. So, reading this email here, the fact that your organization did not spend most of its money in 2006-2008 warrants it to use that funding, and the same issue will come back, and eventually NGLC will get its essay bonding funding cut from 50 cents per undergraduate student to nothing. That isn't you being a passionate club president, that's you threatening a byline funding group to have their funding removed in the next cycle. You then go on to say that the organization is close to having its funding cut, but members such as yourself did not go against the original decision, saying that ultimately, in a way, you deserve special treatment because of your position on the student assembly, having fought for their organization, and as opposed to did them a favor, now you deserve a favor in return. Now, your email signature here at the bottom says Andrew Wang, class of 2008, at-large representative, Cornell Student Assembly. So ultimately, member of the student assembly, you are using your permission, your position, excuse me, to commit an act that, as opposed by the code of conduct and outside of our Cornell bubble in the real world, would be considered extortion. And that to me is not, saying that you're a passionate club president. It's that you're being reckless. You're being reckless with the name of this organization and the reputation of this organization. And you know that I'm passionate about the reputation of this organization. So I was wondering if you can speak to how you threatening to have a certain amount of funding cut actually entitles you to say that you're just being a passionate club president, and this is what people who elected you the SA wanted you to do.
30 seconds, but I'll add in a minute. So,
sure. So I just want to point one issue out that I'm not the club president. I think that's one major question here. I just wanted to, I was asked by this organization to help them out because they're having funding issues. So as their representative, I have a heart to do that, and that's what I did. So I definitely have to thank you for pointing some issues out, Representative Greenberg. However, I have to disagree that it's not forcing them. I'm a senior. I'm graduating. My decisions are gone once I graduate. It does not affect students for here for the next 2 years. The main issue is I brought the main issue I brought that point up, as you said, as you repeated to me, that they may get their funding denied, because that's what happened during the SA meeting last semester. That was one of the issues why their funding may have been denied last semester, if because of the fact that they most of their funding is denied, they did not spend their money.
And you threatened that their organization's funding would be cut to zero, and that by definition is so sorry.
No, I said eventually. That means there's a possibility that, because last semester that was also happening.
But how do you justify using the byline funding process in position as an essay representative as opposed to to try to get special favor as a member of this organization? That's what I understand. Why are you using your position and your history on the student assembly to try to do that?
I wasn't, because the fact that I was
speaker's time has expired. Mazdak.
Thank you. To me, and I'm not going to sort of go over the individual semantics of what this email said, my understanding of it is that this was an email that you sent after repeated email and the student did not respond. Is that correct?
That is correct. Several weeks.
Correct. So, I guess the point that I see, and perhaps we can fight over the language of what he said in that email about the funding, the problem that I see is the bigger issue, and something that a member of the student assembly should be concerned with, is that if we have a violent funded group, and our tendency is that it should be open to all, you know, all undergraduates that want to bring their funding request, blah, 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 they should be open to that, and they should at least respond to that person in a timely manner, telling them, you know, if this is a request they can consider or not. Now, to me, rationally, and perhaps anger may have been emotional at the time when it comes to this email, but perhaps rationally, if you send an email repeatedly and someone doesn't reply to it in a couple of weeks,
And you know the past history with this group, which you did, which is that they don't use their money. Perhaps it's like the reason they're not using their money. It's because they're not replying to emails, they're not replying to funding requests. I would probably get frustrated a little bit too. Now, the action that it gives representatives sort of the course of action they're supposed to take, and what I want to actually recommend to move for right now, is an investigation into MGLC as to why it is that they're not responding to groups of funding, what they've actually done with their funding so far this year, especially this semester. So I would like to ask Vice President of Finance, per the SA Charter, to move for a full investigation, not only of this matter and the email correspondence between Representative Wang and MGLC, not just this one email, but the email going back and forth this semester, but also how MGLC is using their money for this year up until today, and report back to us in a timely manner, preferably by next week, as to what MGLC's happenings have been. And we should note that, you know, this is not something against a particular group, but it's problematic that we have someone who is just an undergraduate or an SA representative ask for something, you don't get a response. It's extremely frustrating. And I would like to...
The speaker's time has expired.
Investigation.
The speaker's time has expired. I don't... Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Now that you've requested, I will initiate and contact them, and I'll try to get it by next week, but if not, it'll be within 2 weeks on the funding information. However, there's another point which needs to be made right now. Just
wait until you're back.
So, what do you say for the record? That there will be
there will be an investigation led by Vice President Gay. Mark, do you still want to speak?
Yeah. I was just saying, I think that... you know, this whole discussion, I have a passion for open discussion in this body. I think, though, that the proper procedure, I'm actually going to definitely applaud CJ in that. I think that the proper procedure for an issue like this would have been to have a discussion in executive session first, and then if there were remaining concerns, because there had never, I think to a lot of people, until they're the first time they've heard of this. And so I think that, you know, I'm a huge advocate for open discussion. I think it would be good to have executive session if there would have still been concerns, then to go ahead and, you know, let people know about it and have it in open discussion. I think that, you know, and then just to get to the email, I would not have written the email in that style. I think though that,
1 minute.
The language that was there, the fact that it indicated it was from the class of 2008 in the bottom of the email, the fact that the byline funding has already occurred, he voted for it, the fact that it said eventually, will eventually be cut, implies not a threat to me, because a threat would not say eventually, a threat would be more like, you know, I would think about funding us unless you would like me to maybe reconsider my vote and bring this back before the NSA. I think the fact that it eventually was indicative of a person at within who was trying to tell this group that if they continued to not respond to emails and such, they would, quote, eventually run into problems with the student assembly. I don't think it was a threat. I think it was a poorly worded email. And I think it's something we probably should have discussed as just the essay first before bringing it.
Speaker's time has expired.
To respond, it was addressed like this.
Yes.
First of all, the reason this was brought is because this was brought forward officially by the president of a byline funded organization, which asked us to investigate this. And if we do this in the executive session, they're not going to know what's going. They're not going to know what's happening. Just like there's been a request all every single week last semester for minutes. They want to know what's happening. This involves the community. It involves one of the byline funded groups. They have a right to know what recourse we're taking. And the other thing, what needs to be addressed is, regardless of the context, regardless of these other issues which keep bringing up, this was a representative using his position, using his influence, using his vote, asking for a favor, asking for this group to go ahead and, against their former decision, change their decision and allocate his group money because of his prior support. And that is straight up corruption. That is, I don't, we can toss these extraneous issues about, oh, he might have been frustrated. It doesn't matter. Alon's
point of order is the speaker's time.
No, it's 5 seconds. The comment was addressed to Vice President Gay, and I gave him 60 seconds. Ahmed, your time.
Thank you very much. I just want to say I do second Mark's comment in the sense of I wouldn't have written this email in this particular language. I think that we should be very careful when we mention our essay position. I definitely agree. I think, however, that we have a big problem here in the sense of I personally feel that Representative Wang has been singled out because there have been emails in the past that have been sent out, not necessarily to groups, but to other representatives, that were inappropriate emails, according to the Sun, and the e-board did not feel it was appropriate to bring that as a conduct issue, even though the language of the email was false.
Can you cite what emails?
I would prefer not to cite the emails. Okay, you got it.
Let me take 30 seconds.
I'm sending an email where Elon talked to Andrew or whoever it was, and I think that we have a problem. I think we have
1 minute.
That the e-board is picking and choosing here. But to be honest with you, I don't think this discussion can go any further. I think it's clear that we should discuss this closely in executive session.
Is the president
of the group here?
No, they're not. The president of the group did attend the executive committee meeting, the president of which she was invited to after she sent Vice President Lavin and I this email expressing her concern regarding the email that was sent.
I would wait until the investigation is completely done and then this comes before us. I motioned to a discussion on this.
Been a
do you guys like to respond to this email?
No.
Actually, point of information.
Yes.
What is the desired outcome from this conversation?
I Vice President Gay asked to put this on the agenda. There were some concerns. There's a motion on the floor. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any dissent? All in favor of ending discussion, please raise your hand. All opposed? The motion fails. It's their discretion to abstain. All in favor of ending discussion, please raise your hand. Seven. All opposed.
Remember, you ruled the
next item on business of the day is Resolution 16, the resolution regarding the 12-1 Election Committee statement by Director Mark Coombs. Mark, you have 10 minutes.
All right, so basically, it's not business of the day because we basically had a discussion very closely related to this last week. It's a statement that we looked at last week. It's in resolution form. Fundamentally, there are a few things that I want to point out and a few concerns that I want to allay. I think it's the right word. Okay. I want to clarify the purpose of this statement, because I think that there are a lot of concern that I guess hopefully maybe not concerned. One of them is that the purpose that the Elections Committee and then I myself presenting it as the chair on behalf of the Elections Committee am doing so with the intent to get rid of two minority seats, an international seat, and an LGBTQ seat. That is incorrect. It is not the intent of this statement or this resolution. The intent is specified by the second whereas clause to ensure that the student assembly is enacting pursuant to this charter. The reason that I didn't have this in resolution form last week is because I didn't think that it would of necessitated vote for us to follow our own charter. Fundamentally, all the Elections Committee did was look at the charter and say, these seats aren't specified here. It's actually the charge of my committee to spell out before the actual election occurs what seats will be up for election in that election. We found this discrepancy. The idea that I'm trying to, you know, like the big bad conservative trying to like get rid of DC for this perennial debate is not true. At least not here. I'm coming to you as the director of elections, telling you what is in and what is not in our charter. For those of you who would think about voting against this resolution because you're concerned about losing those seats, I hope those fears are put to rest by Representative Hartman's resolution, who obviously is a member of the Elections Committee, voted in favor of this statement because we weren't, there was no desire to get rid of these seats. There was a desire to tell the student assembly what was and what was not in our charter. So the fact that Representative Hartman brought a resolution that actually sets out seats with which people are concerned in our bylaws should hopefully take any of those fears that this resolution is trying to get rid of them off the table. This resolution doesn't get rid of anything. There's nothing to get rid of. Why I would urge these things, so then the big question now, you know, is, well, why are you bringing it? For two reasons. One, hopefully I and the Elections Committee in the past have demonstrated a concern that however irritating it may be, we follow our charter. And that if we want to change something, it's better to actually change it officially and make sure that something is officially there than ignore the written rule. It's just because it just creates headaches year after year, and it makes us have to have this discussion. There's often talk about having an efficient assembly. I think that one of the best ways to have an efficient assembly is to not have to attempt to look at the wording of the charter and try to come up with a justification for doing something for which there's no written justification. Right now, as it stands, these seats exist because of common law, because possibly sometime, somewhere, in some past assembly, it could be 17 years ago, they passed a resolution that set these seats out, and they forgot to actually write it in the document, in our guiding document. I don't think this assembly should work that way, and I hope that you don't either. And I hope that, there again, that you realize that a vote for this resolution is not a vote against the international seat, against the minority seats. It's not a vote for the minor. It's just, this is a vote to say, yes, I follow this charter. If people want to see these seats in there, I would encourage you to listen to Representative Hartman and bring his resolution forward. The reason that I would urge you to pass this resolution, and with all due respect to the Office of the Assembly and the people there at, I've had a very good working relationship with them. I like them. I think, though, that this passing this resolution would establish the fact that we as the Student Assembly are the policy makers. The Office of the Assemblies, as good and hardworking as they are there to be our administrative assistants. The problem that I encountered with this statement was, I remember the night of it was final morning. The following night, one of the
we're not mentioning that. Okay, it's been stricken from the record.
The time of the meeting is not to be brought
up. Okay, yes. Yes, okay, time of the meeting indeed. Sometimes close to the time of the meeting. This is before I was able to bring all this officially to the students. I called President Flickland, told them about everything that we had done. We had done a bunch of suggested changes to the election rules. Then we had passed the statement. And he said, rightly back then, you know, I said, what should we do with the statement? He said, well, it'll be taken care of. And we had fundamental belief in the Office of the Assembly that this is the way things work. Committees, especially in particular the Elections Committee, which is charged with, this is a specified charge of ours in the charter, that we announce what seats are available. It's supposed to be taken care of. The Office of the Assembly has refused to act upon it, saying that I had to bring it to this body, etc. So what I'm looking for from this body is an affirmation and a vote of confidence in this assembly to set its own policies, and a vote basically asking the office, you know, we appreciate your help, we appreciate the support you give us, but this is our assembly, and we have to follow our charter.
Yes.
And so, there again, a vote, yes for this resolution is a vote for those reasons. It's a vote if you want to follow our charter, and we want to show that we are the Palmer.
3 minutes.
A vote against this resolution is fundamentally a vote against our charter. As it now stands, these seats don't exist. I'm not saying that's right. I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm not taking a stand. This isn't a moral judgment. This isn't a value judgment. This isn't even an argument. I'm just telling you what's in the charter. I would encourage those with those reservations, please don't vote against us for that reason. You can vote for mine. You can vote for Representative Hartman's. You're still going to be maintaining your same stance. A vote against them, like I said, it's not protecting them. It's a vote against the charter. And hopefully this will get us on the right track. And before we vote, I would love to answer any questions, any concerns right now. And I think a vote of no would be unfortunate. And I think abstentions would be unfortunate as well. And so I want to clarify any remaining lingering questions or concerns that anybody has. I would open myself up to them at this time.
Anyone like to be on the speaker's list? Aside from NASDAQ and ASA. Right, NASDAQ. 2 minutes.
Thank you. Mark, I mean, I agree with you in the sense of obviously I was able to committee pass this. It's an issue of following basically what our documentation says it needs to follow, what's in our documents. I think it's very timely that you've been brought these two regulations at the same time so that we can go with what's there now and recognize that. And then if we want to change this, there is documentation in the works, if you will, to change it, upcoming. I think that's very important that we have that documentation. So people want to see that change happen. I'm going to disagree with Mark on one thing and say, if you're not sure, if you don't want to take a stand, do abstain instead of voting no, because the no vote really just makes no sense. It really is what's your documentation instead of voting it down and voting no. So, okay, I'm
going to
yield the rest of my time,
Dave. Okay. 1 minute, 15 seconds.
Okay. So, Mark, I'm just trying to write this out. I'm a little bit confused.
Absolutely.
So, your resolution isn't Vince's resolution, right? So, you're effectively, I'm just confused as to, you're saying that you want the Assembly's office or the Elections office to follow what we say? Is that all this is?
It's that, and it's for this body to follow its own charter. Because the seats that this discusses that people are concerned about losing aren't actually there. So all I'm saying is that we've been following a process that may have been put into place 17, 18 years ago that we don't know about. It's not actually going to be documented. This was pointed that this was actually to assist and benefit the Assembly. And if anybody's concerned about that stuff, they can pass this resolution and put those seats right back in.
Asa, Craig, 2 minutes.
Just call the question.
Call the question.
It's been a call the question. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, Mark, I will give you 2 minutes to summarize basically the resolution and what you'd like to see accomplished and anything else you'd like to address.
I think we've talked about this to extent.
No.
I hope that, it's supposed to be a procedural thing and a kick-out after the resolution. I really hope that everybody votes in favor of our charter. I think it's a pretty cool document. Like I said, and I would just encourage people in the future to, if they ever have any questions about anything and stuff, to get with me and we can work on stuff like this in the future. It should just be a procedural thing. I look forward to hearing the answers. Thank you.
Any community members that would like to speak?
Community members.
Okay. We will. There's been a motion for unanimous consent. Is there a second? Is there any dissent? Seeing none, Resolution 16 passes unanimously.
Thank you.
On to new business, Resolution 15, the clarification of designated at-large liaison seats by Vince Hartman. Vince, I will give you 5 minutes, discuss this, and then the scope of discussion will be limited to questions because this is a charter change and for the first time it's being introduced. So 5 minutes.
I
don't
know if I need all 5 minutes.
I like to know. Amy, could you close the doors, please? Thank you.
Introducing my resolution for me.
The resolution I'm just bringing forward is in our charter, in common practice, we've had groups that have been stipulated liaisons that have been elected, known as international minority and LGBTQ that everyone's aware of. And if we want to see this remaining process, then we need to put it into our charter. So if you're in favor of it, you have to go in favor of it. I think everyone's aware of what we've been doing. Do you have any questions? Feel free to ask.
I'm going to limit speakers' times to 1 minute and questions only. NASDAQ. Go ahead. 1 minute. Questions?
Thank you. The only thing I wanted to say was that I think that...
questions?
Yes.
I think statements.
And comments may not have been related to my data.
Okay.
So... basically, the only thing I would say is that through these seats, that you should perhaps put something in there that says why we're allocated to, or why did you pick these four constituencies, if you will, or these three constituencies, allocating the number of seats you did. Or maybe you should consider explaining that rationale for the future of this particular one.
Okay.
How many is going to be?
Two.
Okay, I'm going to push in and
been a motion to...
You have questions? I withdraw that.
Chris. One other person on the speaker system. Liaison Junois. Okay. Liaison Junois. Okay. Is there any dissent? All right. Seeing none, we will end discussion and meeting adjourned. What?
Sometimes everyone in license is going to be a charter change. Even if you're not present, you're voting against it. So try to come to me if you want to vote for it.
Been a motion to adjourn. Is there a second? Is there any dissent? What? Engineers? What? Wait, this was completely addressed by Andrew immediately when it was addressed to the executive board. I think this discussion should be reserved for the investigation next week. Thank you, everyone.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.